Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you've stumbled upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload a new episode. I may be starting to upload on YouTube as well, so if you're listening to this on YouTube, feel free to subscribe. And thank you so much for tuning in. This is going to be the continuation of my coverage of Bachelor Pad Season 1. It's a throwback show from 2010, but I'm really excited to cover it. I'm really, really, really enjoying it. See, episodes 3 and 4 are even better than episodes 1 and 2 are, so I'm so excited to talk about them. Before I jump into the recap, I do want to say thank you to everybody who listened to my interview with Quinn from Big Brother 26. It was truly so amazing getting to have him on the podcast. He is like the nicest guy ever. I was a fan of him on the show, and he's just been so kind to me and so willing. He was so kind and willing to come on the podcast, and I really can't thank him enough for coming on, for promoting it, for just being an all-around really, really sweet guy. I'm glad that I picked him to root for in Big Brother 26. Not because, like, it ended up getting me something. Obviously, even if he, like, never acknowledged my presence, I would have been glad that I rooted for him because I was rooting for him for a reason. But it is just very sweet when somebody that you're rooting for on a competition show, like, it's nice. It's nice to get to interact with him as a human being and not just, like, a contestant on the show. And he's just the nicest guy ever. I cannot say more amazing things about Quinn. And if you found this podcast through that interview and you decided to stick around and tune into this, thank you so much. That means a lot. I will obviously be covering Big Brother next summer, but this is a television podcast, so in the interim, I kind of just cover what I'm watching or rewatching and stuff like that. So I do, like, recap episodes like this. Like, right now I'm specifically covering Bachelor Pad, so I'm recapping the episodes and then sharing my thoughts, which is what I do during a Big Brother season as well. But sometimes I just kind of talk about a few different shows that are on my mind. So it really is just whatever I've been watching or rewatching, because I really love television, both reality TV and scripted TV. Like, I think probably one of my biggest hobbies is watching TV. Like, I will give almost any show a chance. I will say I'm not a huge medical show fan because hospitals, like, in a fictional setting freak me out. I gotta be honest. That stuff, that's never gonna appeal to me. Like, I will simply not tune into Grey's Anatomy. I'm sorry. And I know, like, the hospital stuff is, but, like, anytime I've tried to watch a show when they're in a hospital, like, it freaks me out. Anyways, but I will give most shows a chance. I really love talking about TV and stuff that I'm watching. I like diving deep into things and, like, recapping and sharing my thoughts. Like, I did that for Yellow Jackets, which is, like, one of my favorite shows, and that was super fun because I had already seen the show, but then I rewatched it and I took notes and I, like, picked up on things that were hinting towards other things that happened later on, and it was just really fun, and I just really enjoy doing that. So if you enjoyed my interview with Quinn and you're tuning in for my other thoughts on other shows, that means a lot. And I will, of course, be covering Big Brother next summer when that's back, and I'm super excited for that coverage as well. But this is a year-round podcast, so I talk about a variety of shows. And right now I am covering Bachelor Pad Season 1. I did the first two episodes last week before my Quinn interview, and then now I'm continuing that. But yeah, it was really nice, and I do really appreciate everybody who tuned in, and I really, really appreciate anybody who decided to stick around for more. And I hope that this is not the end of my collaborating with other people, you know, for other recaps. Maybe I'll have somebody on for a recap every now and then, now that I've kind of figured out the whole recording a Zoom stuff. That it was my first time doing all of that, so I was really stressed out and I was kind of awkward, but Quinn really carried the whole thing, and he, like, again, just the nicest guy ever. I can't say more wonderful things about him, and I really do just appreciate it. It means a lot to me. It's nice to have people listen to something that you work so hard on. So thanks for tuning in if you're still here. And the reason I said earlier that this might be on YouTube is because when I started this podcast 2 years ago, RSS, the podcast feed where, like, it's like where you have a podcast that then you can distribute your podcast through the RSS feed. I don't know if there are other ways to distribute a podcast, like if you have to do it manually, but that is how I distribute my podcast, through the RSS feed. And so when I started the podcast, there wasn't like an option to send it directly to YouTube. And so I just didn't do that for like a while. And then it became an option, but I had already been doing audio only for so long that I had such a large back catalog that I was like, I started doing it slowly. The issue is the episodes need to be less than 2 hours for you to be able to do that, like transfer it directly, like distribute it directly to YouTube. And I literally kept trying to finish, like the last episode that I like made, maybe not the last episode, but it was like right before my Yellow Jackets deep dive, which is like almost 3 hours, I think. And so I was trying to manually edit a video of the Yellow Jackets deep dive, and I was trying to add some visuals so it wasn't just me talking for an hour. And it was taking me forever because I have a really old computer and it's horrible quality. And like, I gave up. Like, I literally was working on it for months and then I gave up. And I was like, I'm just gonna stick to doing the podcast audio only. But because the Quinn interview, I wanted to include a video for people who are interested in videos. Now I have this weird thing in my brain where I was like, I can't start uploading in real time until I'm caught up with my back catalog. But because of the Yellow Jackets video, I never finished it. I gave up on uploading my back catalog. I was like, I'm just not going to upload to YouTube. Like, I'm not doing this. But because I uploaded the Quinn interview and that one was just not at all, like, I didn't do all of my back catalog then, it kind of jumped on my YouTube channel from episode like 20 something to 92, I think, was the Quinn interview. So since now I've done that, I think I might just start uploading in real time if the episodes are less than 2 hours to YouTube, just to expand my reach. I don't know if that's weird. Maybe if people are interested, I will like start uploading my back catalog, the episodes that are less than 2 hours or 2 hours or less that I can do directly. Maybe I'll just do that and then I'll organize it like in a playlist in order based on the numbers, but the upload dates might not all be in chronological order. But I don't know if that's more annoying. I really don't know. I haven't figured it out. But I got some new subscribers on my YouTube channel because of the Quinn interview. And I was like, I never upload podcast episodes to here. Like, I did it because it was a video and I wanted the video version to be available to people. And I'm not gonna like do video versions of my podcast because I like doing audio only, not just because it takes less time to edit, but because I just can do these like in the comfort of my bed, like not worried at all about what I look like. Not that that's like super important, but I'm like, the audio only is like perfect for me right now. The video felt right for like an interview, but I don't know. I feel like I might upload to YouTube now because I've kind of broken out of like this weird like anxiety that I had, that I was like, I need to catch up on my back catalog before I can start uploading in real time. So then I never started uploading in real time because I wasn't able to catch up on my back catalog, because you can only do episodes that are like less than 2 hours. I'm just going in circles here. But now that I've kind of broken that, and I like did not upload my back catalog before I uploaded an episode in real time, I may just start uploading on YouTube. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet, but if I do, this will be on YouTube like a day after it goes live everywhere else, because I haven't decided yet. But anyways, I also want to apologize because this episode is going out a little bit later than I had anticipated. I knew that the Quinn interview was going to be out Wednesday, and I was like, that'll all have plenty of time. Like, I have Wednesday and Thursday off. I was like, Thursday I can record it. Like, I'll get it out Saturday-ish. And I, unfortunately, had a bit of a mental health crisis, and completely unrelated to the podcast, but it took me forever. So I didn't end up recording, and I'm recording on Sunday. So hopefully this episode will be out like Monday, but maybe like Monday night, maybe Tuesday at the latest, hopefully Tuesday at the latest. But like, it's going out a little bit later than I anticipated. I like to upload typically on weekends. The Quinn interview I knew was going up on Wednesday because I recorded it over the weekend, and because I had to figure out the video stuff too, I was like, I'm giving myself until like Wednesday-ish. And so like that one I knew I was gonna have on Wednesday, But I was like, the next episode will be out on my regular weekend schedule, and I simply fell behind. But hopefully this episode, if it goes out Monday or Tuesday, the next episode will go out this upcoming weekend, and then I'll be back on track. But you know what? It's kind of like two episodes this past week, so I'm trying not to be too hard on myself that this episode's a little late, because what can I say? It was a special interview and it was really nice, and sorry for rambling and for all of my unnecessary introductions, but that's why timestamps exist. So anyways, thank you so much for tuning in. It really does mean a lot. I'm talking so quickly. I did not talk this quickly in the Quinn interview, I don't think. I was so anxious. I'm really sorry if I was awkward. Anyways. So, Bachelor Pad Season 1, Episode 3. So the last we left off, Jesse S. and Craig went home at the last rose ceremony, and Gia was kind of starting to feel on the outs because she, on her date, the original strategic plan was to give Craig the rose so the other side, because there are kind of two sides of the mansion right now, so the other side wouldn't have him to vote out as an easy pick, and they would be able to retain their numbers. But on her date, Gia kind of started bonding with Wes, so she instead gave Wes the rose, and Craig was up for elimination, basically. He was able to be voted out. So Gia's kind of feeling bad, but Nikki specifically is more on the outs because she's currently being blamed for Craig going home, which rightfully so. As we saw at the end of episode 2, she had a conversation with Kipton about how girls on her side were leaning towards voting Kipton out, but she was really torn, and he really was like, please don't vote me out, because they had a friendship going into the house. And so Nikki did not vote to, she did not vote for Kipton, she voted for Craig because she didn't want to vote for Kipton. And because of this, the plan was, it was going to be like a 3-3 split, or maybe not 3-3, but it was going to be a tie vote, and then Gia was going to be able to break the tie, because whichever girl has the rose, whoever won the competition that week gets the rose, and that person gets to break the tie of like the guys. If there's a tie amongst the girls, two girls are tied, then the guy with the rose breaks the tie. So the plan was Gia will break the tie and she will send Kipton home and keep Craig because he's a number for them. There was no tie because Nikki didn't vote for Kipton, and so Craig went home. Gia blames Nikki. They have this conversation in front of everyone, like in the living room after the rose ceremony. It's like super awkward. Kovacs says in his ITMs that the outsiders messed up. He, Dave, and Kipton have power, and Gia is on the chopping block now because of this. Gia says they have to play strategically and not based on relationships, and so she's kind of mad at Nikki because she's like, we're all friends with each other. We need to vote the people that make sense for us in the long term. Like, we're all eventually going to have to get each other out. We can't play too emotional. And once again, Gia and ITMs, those are for people who are not typically into The Bachelor. ITMs are akin to like the diary rooms. In The Bachelor, they called them ITMs. It stands for in the moment. Anyways, so in the ITMs, Gia once again says that she needs to win the competitions because it's not looking good for her. Not only because of where she stands in the house after not keeping Craig safe, but also because, once again, she's in a relationship, so she is not able to form a couple in the way that others are. Like, maybe she can kind of form one with Wes, but it's not the same. Like, the couples have a different bond that she is kind of not able to have. So she's like, I need to win the competition. The competition is a kissing competition, which they've done similar things like this on Too Hot to Handle or Perfect Match, I think. I don't know. I haven't watched a season of Too Hot to Handle in like years. But I know in Perfect Match, they did something like this where it was like a blindfolded kissing contest. And the best kisser wins. So blindfolded, all of the guys kiss all of the girls, and the girls have to vote Well, the guys aren't blindfolded. Like, first, the guys go. The women come out one by one, blindfolded. And then all of the men kiss each woman blindfolded. But the men are not blindfolded when they're kissing the women in the round where the women vote on who the best kisser was. But the woman is, so she can vote blindly. And then they switch, so the men come out one by one blindfolded, and the girls each kiss them, and the guys then vote on who they thought was the best kisser. Gia is obviously not super excited about this competition because she does have a boyfriend, and she doesn't really want to be kissing a bunch of people, which is valid. Natalie says in ITMs that Gia shouldn't be upset. She knew what the show was going to be like. She knew that the competitions were going to be around romance and dating because that's what the show is. And she shouldn't be so upset. Like, she's upset about something that she knew was basically going to happen, which I guess is fair. I think it's just also hard because this was the first season of Bachelor Pad, and I feel like it's hard to gauge going into it how much, like, I don't know how this was sold to them. Like, how much did they think it was going to be Bachelor-centric in the same way? And I think this might have been the first Bachelor franchise spinoff. I'm not exactly sure. I know there have been some since, but I think this was definitely one of the earliest ones. This was before Paradise. And then after Paradise, they did, like, Bachelor Winter Games, which only lasted one season. They did Bachelor Listen to Your Heart, which came out in 2020. Which was really good timing for them that it came out in 2020, because at the beginning of the pandemic, when, like, all of production shut down, the Bachelorette season was, like, postponed. So it kind of was. I honestly do not know if I would have watched Bachelor's Listen to Your Heart if the future of The Bachelor was so up in the air. Not that it was going to be canceled, but it was like, when are, like, nobody knew early on, like, when production was going to resume. Like, it was all very, like, I didn't know when The Bachelorette, Claire's Bachelorette season was going to air. So it was nice to kind of have that to watch and be like, well, this is the last Bachelor Nation show, new Bachelor Nation show we can watch for a while. But I think Bachelor Pad was one of the first spinoffs. So I guess it's also hard to say because it's like Natalie's like, you should have known what you were signing up for. But I would argue that in the first season of a show, you don't really know completely what you're signing up for. And I don't really blame her for maybe not really knowing the extent of the competitions. And it's also like, it's not like every single competition up until this point has been about like romance or dating or any, you know, they had a pie eating. The Twister one, I guess, was kind of touchy. Like, you were very much on top of each other, and that was maybe kind of sexual and romantic, whatever. But then they had a pie-eating contest. I don't really see... It's not like every single thing has been, like, the dating game, you know? So, do I really blame her? No. Do I also see where Natalie's coming from? Yes. Ashley doesn't know if she wants to participate because she's a high school teacher and she wants her students to respect her. So she is saying that she doesn't know what she's going to do. And then before she starts kissing anybody, she's like, I'm going to step out away. I'm not going to do this. I want my students to respect me. By the way, if you hear any background noise, I am fostering kittens that I can only do so much to control them. Anyways, so Ashley takes herself out of this competition, which, you know what, I respect it. It's also like a funny concept though, because I don't know if this is true, but it feels like, and obviously this is like a spinoff, so it's not exactly the same. And obviously like the reality TV and the Bachelor franchise specifically has evolved to a different level where it's like a lot of people don't go back to their regular jobs, or even if they go back to like regular civilian jobs, I don't know how many people who are like teachers go back to being like high school teachers. I can't think, the last few teachers that I can think of have been like kindergarten teachers or like Michelle Young. I don't think she ever went back to being a teacher. You know, like, people don't really go back to their jobs. Even if they don't become, like, influencers full-time, a lot of the times they don't go back to, like, their original career path. And so it's, like, it's just interesting to me because I don't feel like anybody would ever say that. That would really surprise me. That would really surprise me. I feel like most people on the Bachelor franchise, maybe they do, but I don't feel like people who have jobs, like, you know why? It's maybe because certain jobs that people come on the show they either have a better success rate or just like, I don't know. A lot of people come on the show and they're like personal trainers or that's more of the guys, but like, or like dental or medical sales. Going back to a sales job, I'm sure is easier because it's like, I don't know. I've never worked a sales job, but I feel like a lot of those things can be done from an office. Like they're not frontward facing and like, you don't have to meet a bunch of people who are like, oh my God, you were on The Bachelor. You know what I mean? But being a teacher is very much like, if a teacher at my high school went on The Bachelor and then they came back, everybody would be like, oh my God, they were on The Bachelor. Like, especially high school, because at least for me, I was watching The Bachelor in high school. Like, if it was like for kindergarten teachers, I get it more because it's like your kindergartners probably aren't watching The Bachelor. So like, maybe it wouldn't mean anything to them and the parents, like if you, like a high school teacher, I get more, I guess you wouldn't want to do anything like that crazy. That like you're, if you were a kindergarten teacher, that your students' parents would like be. But like kissing people in a kissing contest, I wouldn't really care. Would it be a little weird if I had a teacher and then I was watching The Bachelor and I like, then like the next year she was like my AP government teacher? Maybe it'd be a little bit weird, but I honestly, I don't, I think it would be more cool. I'd want to be like, what was Chris Harrison like? Because he was the host when I was in high school. He's not right now, but I'm not in high school right now. But like, if I had a teacher in high school who went on The Bachelor, I would just have so many questions. I'd be like, what was filming like? How much did the producers manipulate you? Like, I just want to know the stories. I wouldn't care that she kissed people. I'd be like, so what happened? Anyways, I didn't mean to go on that tangent. But like, I really wouldn't care as a high schooler. I was also a fan though. That would just be cool to me. I'd be like, please tell me all of the inside information, please and thank you. Anyways, Kovacs, I really do not like this Kovacs guy. I don't know what season he was on. I don't know if he was a villain on his season, if he was like a great guy on his season, but he pisses me off. I do not like this Kovacs character, okay? I really do not like him. He says in his ITMs that, like, I didn't write it down. I don't know why I said it. Like, I wrote it down. He's just really an asshole about her not participating. And it's like, the thing is, I really think when it comes to kissing, like, for me, it's not even the, like, oh, like, the reason. I know I just went on a tangent about how I personally wouldn't care if I was a student. And, like that part doesn't make sense to me. But, like, I honestly, and maybe this makes me a prude, maybe this whatever, it's a competition. I really respect, this isn't, like, Big Brother where, like, and even then, if somebody needs to, like, not participate in a physical competition or they, like, can't give their all, I honestly, like, I don't even care that much. But I think when it's something as, like, personal and, like, private as, like, a kissing competition, I really cannot shit or judge, I cannot shit on or judge a single human being for whatever reason that they decide to step away from this. Because I personally, I don't know what it would depend on the vibe, but like I really do not think that I would be super comfortable. Like, even if I was like, I'm gonna do it, I would not be like, I would be really, really uncomfortable. Like, I think when it's something like consent is really important, and like at the end of the day, making yourself physically uncomfortable and like kissing a bunch of people that you're not really interested, like, power to the people who are like, this is a competition, I'm gonna go all for it because I want to win, and they don't like view it that way. But for people, if that's like a personal thing that you're like not comfortable kissing a bunch of people, I really don't care what the reason is, whether that's because like you don't want people to think, like, whatever the reason is, I don't think we should ever judge people for like not wanting to kiss us, competition or not. Like that, like, that's weird, and it really pissed me off because it's like, shut up, Kovacs. She doesn't want to kiss you. She doesn't have to kiss you. There's no solid reason. She doesn't have to, like, even if I was saying that I don't think her reason makes much sense, or that you wouldn't see it in Bachelor today because people don't really talk about, like, their job in that way anymore. And that's where my tangent stemmed from. The whole attitude, I would never, if I was one of the guys or if I was a girl and a guy stepped out and was like, I don't really want to do this, I would never be like, how dare he? He's not playing the game. Because it's not like just a competition. You were like, kissing is like a physical, like, I don't, that's weird. Anyways, sorry to go on that other tangent. I really do not like Kovacs. He's annoying to me. Let her not participate for whatever reason, okay? Tenley really likes Kiss Number 3, and the theory is it's Kipton, and that's, like, really exciting for her because she and Kipton have had kind of a bit of a flirtation. She likes Kipton. Kipton likes her. So this is exciting for Tenley because she's like, I just kissed him, and it was, like, really great, and I didn't even know I was kissing him. Like, and that's sweet. I'm happy for her. Gia goes next, and she participates despite being in a relationship because she really wants to win. And again, I can respect and admire that. I can also respect somebody not wanting to participate. Your body, your choice. Most of the kisses are really tame and, like, respectful, like just pecks and stuff, because they are obviously trying to be respectful of the fact that she has a boyfriend. Then the girls go next. So it's a guy comes out blindfolded one by one, and the girls kiss the guys, and the guys then vote on who the best kisser is. And the girls all try really hard. Like, they're really, really like, I'm going to be the best kisser I can. Gia starts to freak out a little bit because she's like, I'm not going to win because I'm not going to, like, go full force making out with any of these guys because that feels disrespectful to my relationship. So she, like, freaks out because she's like, I'm not going to win. I don't want to kiss all of these guys again. I'm not going to win. There's no purpose in this. And so she bows out and she takes herself out of the competition, which, again, I can respect. And I honestly feel like I would end up being in, like, one of those spots. I'd be like, I'm not going to win this. I really don't want to kiss a bunch of people. I'm going to bow out because there's no chance I'm winning best kisser. Like, I think that would be more where I would fall into, I got to be honest. I'd be like, I'm not winning this. And she really freaks out, not just because she feels bad about the fact that she kissed any of them. Like, she's like, why did I participate in this at all? I'm not going to win. I don't, like, she's really in her head about it. And also she feels bad because she knows that she needs to win to maintain her safety in the mansion. And she just, like, feels bad about all of the aspects, about the fact that she participated at all, about the fact that she, like, now can't be safe, all of these things. She's feeling a lot of things, and I really respect it. I really like Gia, like, throughout the four episodes I've seen so far, I think she's one of my favorite people that I'm rooting for, because I think she's in a very interesting position being the only girl in the house, or the only person in the house with a relationship coming in. And so she's had a very interesting role to play, and she's been very competition-minded because of that, in a way that's been really interesting for me to watch. And she also just seems really sweet, and I, like, don't have any, like, negative feelings watching her. I said this in my last episode about Bachelor Pad. I know very few of these people from their, like, this was all before my time. So I haven't seen any of these contestants, like, seasons all the way through. And so there's a lot of, like, I'm really just going purely based off of this. I know of Tenley, like, her face looks super familiar to me, but the rest of them I really do not know much of. So if she was the worst on her season, my apologies, but I really enjoyed watching her on this season. She seemed sweet. She seemed, like, strategic, but also emotional. Like, I've enjoyed watching her so far. So I was rooting for her, and I was also upset that she wasn't going to be safe. David, or Dave, I don't know. I have him written as David and then Dave sometimes in my notes. Dave wins best kisser of the men, and then Peyton wins best kisser of the women. I don't really like Dave either. I don't really think there's any of the guys that I really like, but, like, a lot of the guys are, like, really, like, they're assholes in their ITMs. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes they say things and I literally am like, shut the fuck up. They piss me off a lot. I can't lie. Anyways, Dave's date is first, and his card says what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So obviously they're going to Vegas, and he gets to pick three people again, three women, and he picks Nikki, Chrisley, and Natalie. For Nikki, he said that he was impressed that she changed her vote last week, and he, you know, wanted to connect with her because he's like, she's not firmly on that side. She's, like, willing to vote whichever way she wants, you know, and he was impressed by that. For Chrisley, she was on the other side, and so that's strategic because he kind of wants to win her over. And then for Natalie was, like, the purely romantic pick. Which has been really interesting to see in these dates, the decisions the men make, the men and the women, in, like, choosing somebody they're maybe romantically interested in, and then people that they maybe want to win over strategically or as numbers. And that's been really interesting to see. And I like that he explained his thought process behind each of them. So I will appreciate that out. I will appreciate that. Kovacs, meanwhile, back at the mansion, or they're still at the mansion. They haven't gone on the date. Anyways, Kovacs wants Gia out this rose ceremony. Like, he really wants her to be the one who's voted out. And I really don't like Kovacs, not just because he's targeting Gia and I like Gia. She's stressed about being in danger. And then Wes comforts her. Wes is gaming really hard. He wants to target the couples. He's like, they are always going to have a bond that the other people don't have. We need to target the couples. And I will say, it's been interesting because it's like, Wes is at it very much in these two episodes. It is very much like him consistently, we need to target the couples, we need to target the couples. Like, almost every time we see him, it's him saying how much he needs to target the couples and how much he wants to target. Like, that's all that he talks about. And it's just, I like to think very much about the edit when I'm watching reality TV, and it makes me wonder how much he actually was talking about, like, we need to target the couples, or how much they decided to make that his story, so then the couples not liking him would make sense. I think it's probably a combination of both. I do think Wes, I also don't know, because I have to be honest, I feel like I know a lot more, and I know a lot more of the tricks, and I can pick up a lot more of, like, the Franken biting and the editing and stuff on the current era of The Bachelor, because I've been watching The Bachelor now for, I think, like, almost a decade, and I feel like I understand the editing and the Franken biting, and I just don't know how, and even in the time that I've watched, like, at some point there was a producer, Elon Gale, I think is his name, who was very, very pivotal to a lot of the, like, the seasons, I was gonna say the early seasons, but not early seasons, just, like, the early seasons I watched, like, the first few seasons I watched, he was, like, super pivotal and super influential. And then he kind of left and things really shifted after that. And then Mike Fleiss, I think, left, or, like, some higher up left. And, like, there have been, like, a lot of shifts in the producing and the editing, even throughout, like, the decade that I've been watching The Bachelor franchise. So I have to be honest, as much as I like to think about the edit, I don't feel like I know much about, like, what the state of the edit was, like, back then, you know? Like, how, obviously it's a produced show, obviously there's always been editing and manipulating, but I have to be honest, I feel like I am, and maybe there's, like, an allure or, like, a level that I'm enjoying it because I don't have these, like, constant, I wonder, like, how manipulated this was. Like, I do still obviously have those layers to it, but I'm really believing it in a way that I don't typically when I'm watching The Bachelor nowadays in real time. But I'm like, yeah, no, I think Wes was definitely targeting the couples. Like, part of me is like, but how much was that the only thing they focused on? And he was actually not that focused on that. But I'm like, I don't know. I believe it. The edit's working on me. I gotta be honest. Anyways, obviously with always a bit of skepticism, and obviously as much as certain people are rubbing you the wrong way and I don't like things they're saying, I'm not talking about them as human beings. Like, Kovacs is really pissing me off, but this was like 15 years ago. I know nothing of this man. He could have been lovely on his season. He could have been the worst ever. And regardless, however he came across in this season, however I'm receiving him this season, or however he came across on his other seasons, I don't know him as a person, and this was 10 years ago, so he may be a lovely man. I'm not commenting on him as a human being, especially not a 10-year-old version of him. Obviously, I think that if people have, like, really offensive pasts, I don't think it being like, oh, that was 10 years ago, move on, is a good excuse. I'm just saying, from the perspective of somebody covering a reality TV show, I'm really not trying to make moral judgments on people, like, ever, especially not when I'm talking about something that was, like, a decade ago, because these people are already virtually strangers to me. No, they are strangers to me, and, like, this version of them from 10 years ago is obviously, people change a lot in 10 years. I'm not saying, anyways, like, I really am not trying to shit on anybody. I don't even remember how I got on that tangent. Oh, Wes is really trying to break up the couples, but you know what? I can respect a gamer. I love that for him. Meanwhile, on Dave's date, they get to Vegas, the hotel pool is topless. It's already causing some tension because the other two girls on the date know that Natalie is gonna do whatever she can, so they're like, Natalie is going topless at some point. Like, they just causing a bit of tension. Chris Elite really wants to shoot her shot because the kiss made her like Dave. Like, she wasn't particularly looking at Dave, but the kiss, she felt a chemistry, and she was, like, kind of starting to like Dave now because of it. She's kind of having a conversation with Dave, but before she can shoot her shot, Natalie starts doing something in the background, and he gets distracted, and he's like, we should go see what Natalie's up to, and she does not get to shoot her shot. Natalie takes her top off, they swim in the pool, they're all having a great time. And then back at the mansion, Peyton's date card arrives and it says, start your engine, so it's obviously going to be some kind of race car date. Ari Lyandek Jr. is quaking in his boots. I'm kidding. This was before his time too, I think. No, actually, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. I gotta be honest, I don't know. Because I know there are people on this season who are from Ali's season, but I don't know if there have been multiple bachelorettes named Ali, because I can only think of the one. Was he on Ali's season? I gotta be honest, I'm really rusty on my Bachelor Nation history. I knew more about it at some point, and, like, I've forgotten so much. I used to, like, know so much about the history of The Bachelor, and, like, I fear that knowledge has escaped me. I can tell you a lot about, like, current Bachelor Nation, like, the intricacies of, like, people's social media presences and, like, stuff like that. Like, I know an unfortunate amount about, like, Maddie Pruitt. But I really do not remember, like, any of the stuff I learned about, like, the history of The Bachelor and stuff like that, which I did once know a good amount about. I think I could, like, everyone, like, I have it in there somewhere. But I really don't remember. I really don't remember if this was before his time. So I'm sorry, Ari Lyandek Jr. Anyways, I'm not actually. I'm not sorry to Ari Lyandek Jr. He really pissed me off on The Traitors. Like, I'm not, like, he really, I watched The Traitors. I was like, I know Ari. I didn't dislike him on The Traitors. He did a decent job. But the way he really held on to anger towards Suri after the fact really pissed me the fuck off. There was literally at some point he did a Q&A on Instagram, and he, like, somebody asked him about it, and he said something about, like, how he really does not respect the way Suri won at all. He misspelled her name and then he tagged her. How are you gonna misspell her name and tag her? Like, loser, flop. Anyways, Peyton's date says, start your engines. That's how I got on the Ari Lyandek Jr. tangent. Back on Dave's date, they go up to a suite in this hotel, this Vegas hotel, and immediately there's a date card that, like, there's a card that says he needs to give somebody a rose, and that person will have a one-on-one dinner, and the other two ladies will be sent back to the mansion. He gives Natalie the rose, which was not unexpected, and Chrisalee is upset because she didn't tell him how she felt. The Vegas date ends up being a fantasy suite. So they have their dinner, and then there's a, if you choose to forego your individual suites, classic card. And they accept it. And he says in his ITMs that he thinks Natalie could be a good ally, but he also wasn't expecting to find love. And I thought that was really interesting. I like the way he said that. He was like, she can be a good ally, like, very much talking about her in, like, a game sense of, like, them being a duo will help them in the game, but also he's actually starting to like her. I really enjoy that. I think that's one of the really interesting aspects about this. And obviously, it happens in most social strategy games. I'm not big on Survivor, so I don't know how common showmances are in Survivor, if at all. Like, has anybody ever gotten married and had kids from Survivor? I really don't know. But that happens on Big Brother. Like, people fall in love. And so, like, I'm not saying that this is unique to Bachelor Pad, but it is just really interesting seeing all these people who their initial foray into reality TV was, like, love, like, a dating show, then try to compete while also trying to balance the fact that they have feelings for each other. Like, it's all just very interesting because it's, like, going on dates and getting the roses is built into the game. Like, you're competing for money, but also, like, part of the prize every time is a date, you know? Which is all just very interesting. It's a very, very interesting show. I really recommend it. I'm, like, having a great time watching it, taking notes, covering it. Like, it's been so fun. I'm glad my sister suggested this. Shout out to you. Anyways, Natalie and Dave, after their fantasy suite, are solidly now a couple, but they, when they get back to the mansion, decide that they're going to keep it quiet for strategy reasons. Tenley doesn't want Kipton to forget about her since, oh wait, I forgot, I got distracted by my Ari Lyandek Jr. tangent. But for the date, Peyton picks Kovacs, Kipton, and Jesse B, which is relevant because Tenley, she is a little bit freaked out that Kipton's going on this date. She doesn't want Kipton to forget about her. And she tries to sneak into his bed and kind of like cuddle. And it's kind of awkward because he doesn't want a target on her, on his back, because hanging around her had already caused some whisperings. She takes it as a rejection. It's all very awkward. And then Tenley talks to Natalie about it, and Natalie acknowledges in ITMs that it's a game, that it's hard because it's like she doesn't think that this response from Kipton necessarily indicates a lack of interest. She's just kind of like, he's playing the game and he doesn't on a game level want this to hurt his chances. So he's talking to Tenley in a way that he maybe wouldn't if this was just a regular season of The Bachelor, which was interesting. I really enjoyed that. Anyways, Peyton's date is a race car date. Not much to note during the actual race car. Like, nothing much happened. They just raced cars. Anyways, then they have, like, conversations with each other. And Peyton asks Kipton about Tenley. And he says they're not a thing. He says he's unsure if they're even a good fit. But then he says in ITMs that was a lie. And he just needs to get the rose to be safe. And he's downplaying his feelings for Tenley. Which I was really... That made me smile because I was like, I was kind of unsure because it was a little bit awkward when he kind of didn't really want her to cuddle with him. And I was like, oh, I don't think he likes her. But it was nice. And then he was like, yeah, I don't really know if we're a good fit. And I was like, Tenley likes him more than he likes her. But he kind of was like, no, this is very much strategy. I am interested in pursuing Tenley, which I can respect. Then back at the mansion, Elizabeth is torn because she wants Kovacs to get the rose on this date, but she's also worried he'll be tempted. And Kovacs and Elizabeth are very much a couple. I said in my last episode that I'm not really into the Kovacs-Elizabeth dynamic. Like, they really, I don't think they like each other. I don't know if toxic is the right word because that feels a little bit extreme. But I don't really like their vibe. I don't really like their dynamic. Like, I don't, obviously, they didn't end up together, I don't think, because this is like 10 years old. And like, I don't think anybody from The Bachelor had spinoffs had a successful relationship. Or at least not like long-term, like they're married. Maybe some people dated for a few years after. Maybe when I'm done with the show, I don't want to look up stuff right now because I don't want to see spoilers. Like I genuinely have no idea when I'm watching these episodes who goes home every week and who wins the season. I don't know anything. So I don't want to like look stuff up to spoil myself, but maybe after I'm done, I will like do some research and see if anybody's still together. Or obviously nobody's still together, but like if anybody dated each other for a little while after, because that would be a little bit interesting to me. Anyways, because like nobody from Bachelor Winter Games is together, but like some relationships did come out of Bachelor Winter Games. They just didn't last long term. So that would be interesting for me. But anyways, I don't remember. Oh, Kovacs and Elizabeth, I really doubt that they even dated after the show. They do not seem like they're good together. She really does not want him to in any way like flirt or pursue it, but she also wants him to be safe and get the rose. So she's kind of torn. Back on the date, Peyton asks Kovacs about Elizabeth, and he, unlike Kipton, is not really denying it at all. He says that he wasn't intending for that to be the plan. He wanted to be an individual, but like he kind of fell into that, and like he doesn't deny that they're a couple at all or try to remove that label from them. Then Jesse B and Peyton have a conversation, and he mentions that he and Natalie like had a thing at the beginning, but they're not really together at all. They're not really a good match. And he and Peyton kiss. Like it's romantic. It's like they're very much into each other and they kiss. She gives Jesse B the rose, and then they get back to the mansion. And when they get back to the mansion, there's a fantasy suite card waiting there for Peyton. And she asks Jesse if he wants to go, and they decide to go, and they go to the fantasy suite. Interestingly enough, it's just a room in the mansion that I like set aside for them is their fantasy suite. But they do go to the fantasy suite together, which is just a private room in the mansion, because I didn't mention this in this episode because it hasn't come up, but they are all living in the same room on bunk beds. So this is just a private room that they have together. Kovacs in ITMs says Elizabeth is ruining everything for him. They talk about her not being consistent, and she kind of jokes that she will continue to not be. Like, he's like, just don't, like, change your mind or whatever. Like he says something about how she is not very consistent even in the way she talks about him. Like, she'll be wishy-washy with the girls of, like, she likes him, she doesn't like him. He's a great guy, he sucks. And he kind of jokes about this, and she kind of jokes back, like not being like, no, like they are not good together, respectfully. why are they together? They don't even seem to like each other. Like, I feel like they're just attracted to each other. And, like, they're like, we need numbers. I really don't see what they like about each other. And, again, this is an edited show. The Bachelor franchise has in the past edited couples to seem like the only thing they do is fight or, like, they're completely perfect. I'm not trying to say that they couldn't have dated after the show. But based on the edited show, like, why are they together? Why is he saying in ITMs that she's ruining everything for him and he doesn't even want to be in this couple? Like, leave then. It's so annoying. Anyways, Gia and Wes are kind of bonding and getting very close, and she wants Wes to stick around as long as he can. They talk about the votes and where things are going to go, and she says in ITMs that if she was going to be tempted by anyone, it would be Wes. He sings for her. I wrote in my notes, pack it up, listen to your heart. She calls him the modern day Shakespeare, but better and cuter. Do I think she and her boyfriend, who she was dating at this time, got married? I don't think they did. Hi, I'm adding this in during editing, so if the audio is slightly different, that's why. I made a TikTok with the clip of Gia talking about Wes being the modern day Shakespeare, and somebody commented that they hope Gia rests in peace, and I had no idea that she had passed away. I really hadn't looked up anything about the season or the contestants because I didn't want to be spoiled, but I felt like I would be doing a disservice if I didn't acknowledge her passing. And I don't think I said anything like bad about her, but like I just did feel really bad because if I had known that, I feel like I would have been more aware of that. She did end up taking her own life. And I felt the need to acknowledge that because I really did enjoy watching her, and I like had nothing but great things to say about her. But I would have had like a weight to talking about her on the show if I had known that, just because I don't want to in any way disrespect her. And specifically, I know like the boyfriend she was dating at the time, there was a fight before her passing. And I just like in no way want to disrespect her memory. And I'm really sorry if I did at all. I'm very sorry. I felt the need to interject here because it feels weird to talk about like the hypothetical what happened to Gia after the show when she is no longer alive. And so I'm sorry for intercutting this here. But I literally just found out about this as I was editing, and I felt the need to include that because I really had no idea, and I felt the need to mention that because it felt kind of weird not to. Anyways, that's it. Back to the podcast. Jesse B and Peyton's fantasy suite went well. They now feel like they're kind of a couple-ish. Gia and Wes stayed up talking. Like, Wes says they're kind of tired because they stayed up all night talking. Wes, again, every time we see him, he's talking about how he wants to break up the couples. Elizabeth really doesn't like Wes because he wants to break up the couples and she's in one. Wes then encourages Gia to talk to people, try to swing their votes so she doesn't go home. Basically campaign, if you watch Big Brother. He's like telling her to campaign. Specifically to David, Kipton, and Jesse because those are votes against her. And Dave is the tiebreaker because he has the rose. So he basically gets two votes, which is kind of like messed up. But I also like don't know how else they would really break a tie because it's like, who's going to decide? Chris Harrison? I don't know. So like, I get it. That makes sense on some level. They're kind of like the HOH of the week, but like they also get a vote. So anyways, Gia tries to convince Kipton to keep her. He's heard about last week. The talk does restore his faith in her a little bit, but he's still unsure because if he doesn't vote for Gia, the other option is Elizabeth, and he doesn't really want to vote Elizabeth out if that's going to upset like the people he's aligned with, which is Kovacs, who's in a relationship with Elizabeth, and also like Dave might not want to break the tie or be the one, you know, like, so he's torn about what he's going to do. But he's kind of upset about last week because he kind of felt like Gia was the one who was rallying people to vote him out. But that wasn't really like the way it happened. She's like, no, like, I feel like I just kind of became the messenger. Probably because she had the rose. So she was the tiebreaker. So she was just kind of talking through things with people. But it was never like, oh, you would need to vote him or we should vote him. It was nothing like that. But she defends herself and they end up being okay, but he's unsure still who he's going to vote for, because he does not want to upset the people he's aligned with. For the girls going home, it's between Elizabeth or Gia, so that's kind of where the votes are going right now. Weatherman, his name's Jonathan, but they call him the Weatherman for some reason. He thinks it's between him and Kovacs. It is between him and Kovacs. Natalie and Elizabeth agree to vote for the Weatherman, obviously, because Elizabeth is aligned with Kovacs and Natalie is aligned with Elizabeth. The Weatherman talks to Gia about voting for Kovacs, and she's very much on board to vote for Kovacs, and she does vote for Kovacs. Then Ashley votes for Kovacs. Wes tries to convince Kovacs to vote for Elizabeth, and he takes it as a threat. It was kind of a stupid move. He was trying to be like, if you can't think, like, romantically, like, it's not about you as a couple, like, you need to vote this way, or, like, you'll be targeted next week. Like, I don't know. It didn't land well. Like, the thing is, do I think it's a valid point to be like, hey, don't vote for people just based off of, like, a relationship? Maybe. Do I think doing that to the person they're in a relationship with is smart? No. Like, I think if he had done this said this to, like, Kipton, maybe it would make more sense. But saying it to Kovacs, like, essentially vote out the girl that you're in a relationship with, makes no sense. She's not going to – you need to just factor into account that if somebody is, like, up for elimination, basically, the person that they're in a couple with, that's not a vote in your favor. Like, you just got to accept the fact that is an automatic vote to keep them. And you know why? Because if you win a competition, you get a rose. And if you're in a couple, for the most part, you will always choose somebody that you are, like, you will choose that person to go on the date, because then you get a date together. But you also, like, you know what I mean? Having a couple is smart, because if the person that you're aligned with wins the competition, then you're safe. Like, why would he vote for Elizabeth and then not have that, like, easy person that would save him if she were to win a competition? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Appeal to other people, not the person that they're literally in a couple with. He's never going to be a vote for Elizabeth until, like, maybe the very, very end. Anyways, Wes tells Kipton that if Elizabeth doesn't go home this week, Kovacs will go next. He's playing a bit too hard. Like, the Kipton thing I can respect a bit more, but the Kovacs thing was stupid. The last two guys who have yet to receive a rose at the rose ceremony are Kovacs and Weatherman, which is to be expected. And then Kovacs gets the last rose, which means Jonathan, the Weatherman, is going home. The last two women are G and Elizabeth, and it's a tie. So Dave gets to decide, since he was the guy who won the competition and has the rose. So he has to break the tie. And he decides to keep Elizabeth, so Gia's going home. And I was really sad, because, again, I really like Gia. But I get it. Dave's aligned with Kovacs, who's in a relationship with Elizabeth. It makes more sense. Gia is not as useful of a number to him, and she's in a relationship, so she was already kind of an outsider. It makes sense. I understand why he went with Gia. Also, Gia's, like, closest alliance member, the person who was pushing the hardest for her to be around, was Wes, and Dave is not really a huge fan of Wes. So I don't blame him. Did it suck? Yes. But anyways, moving on to episode 4. After the rose ceremony, Wes is obviously really upset. Dave is upset that Wes voted against the majority and caused a tie, because he's like, if he had voted where he knew the votes were gonna lie, I wouldn't have had to break the tie. And they're mad at each other because Wes is like, why'd you send Gia home? And then Dave's like, why'd you have to make me send Gia home? It's a nightmare. They kind of argue. Natalie says in ITMs that Wes is wrong and this game is about relationships and not about winning the competitions. They're kind of disagreeing with Wes's perspective because he's very competition-minded. He's very strategy-minded. While Natalie and the people who are in couples more, or just have more deep relationships with each other, are more like, it's not just about winning the competitions, it's about relationships. And I would argue, just as any good social strategy game is, it's about both. You know, on Big Brother, you can comp out and you can get to the end and you can win that way. But if people don't like you, you're screwed, because there's going to come a competition that you're not going to win. You know what I mean? So it's kind of both. But this show, I think, probably leans a little bit more relationship than competition just by nature of the fact that they're on a Bachelor franchise show and most of them are like eligible singles looking for love. Interested in that, coming straight off of a dating reality show. You know what I mean? So like, I do think it leans a little bit more that way. And also, again, the romance is built into the fabric of the game because when you win safety, you also win dates and like roses and all of, like, you know what I mean? So I get what Natalie's saying. I enjoy the people who are playing more strategically, but I'm very torn. Like, I'm very in the middle because it's like, I understand where Wes is coming from. I think you also have to be aware of how other people around you, like, see the game. Even on, like, Big Brother. Obviously, this is not Big Brother. Big Brother is much more intricate than this show so far. Big Brother's been going on for, like, 20 seasons. Bachelor Pad had 3. Like, there's a lot more strategy and, like, different dynamics that play out in, like, 20 seasons that I think end up making the show more complex. Also, it's just longer and like there are different aspects. Anyways, Big Brother is a more complicated game. I'm not like dissing Bachelor Pad. I think it's a phenomenal show, but I'm not dissing it by saying that. But like when you're playing Big Brother, there are people who play it emotionally and people who play it very, very strategically. And you have to kind of know your audience. And I think Wes's issue in this house that he's in is that he didn't know the audience to play with. There was that guy who went home like the first episode who said like, if it's between the love of my life or the money, I'm taking the money. He went home like the first episode or the second episode. Like the people you're playing with, which I think if I were to go on Bachelor Pad, I would probably lean more into the, like the relationships aspect because you're all like, because it's a Bachelor franchise show, like that would be kind of obvious to me. Wes was playing too hard. He was thinking too much about like the mechanics and the like strategy and the like, no, you need to have the numbers here and there. And it's just like, he didn't know his audience. Anyways, Wes is like coming for Dave now. Dave is his mortal enemy. He wants to get Dave out if it's the last thing he does. This same night, surveys are delivered in front of the mansion and they have to complete them anonymously and they can't like share with each other what, like they have to do it individually, anonymously. Fill out these surveys. Dave says the tension will hurt Wes more than it will hurt him. And again, this is just, I don't really like Dave. Like he really bothers me because there's just like a level of arrogance where I'm like, shut up, shut up. I mean, like, I guess he's not wrong in the long run. It does hurt Wes more, but it's like this level of cockiness where it's like, this tension is gonna hurt him more than me. I'm fine. Like, oh God, it's annoying me. It's worse that he's right. Anyways, well, Wes kind of begins to self-isolate. He's upset that nobody is playing the same game he's playing. You know, he's playing like 4D chess. Everybody else is playing checkers or whatever the saying is. Like he's playing one game and they're all very much playing another, which I guess would be frustrated. But he kind of, that compounds with the fact that he's missing Gia and he's sad that Gia went home. And I think he also probably feels a level of like failure because he tried so hard to get Gia to be safe and it like didn't hit, that was it. Hayden says the strategy and the game itself is getting more intense as the time goes on. Then they are called outside to play the competition and the competition is about the survey. You have to guess what the majority said for each survey prompt. The first, and it's split by women and men, and the first on each side to get 4 points wins. The first question is who they think is most likely to win the season, and the majority said Kipton. The next question was who is your enemy, and the majority said Chrisley. The third question was who is the most shallow, and the majority said Elizabeth. Then the fourth question is who is the dumbest, and the majority said Gwen. Most in the game guessed Natalie, and she was happy because she guessed herself. And she was like, Chris Harrison was like, why are, or maybe it was Melissa, because there's Melissa, the host, and then Chris Harrison's also hosting. Somebody was like, why are you happy about that? And she's like, because I got the point. And they're like, well, you don't know yet. We haven't read the answers. Like, the majority of the guessers said they thought the majority said Natalie, but the actual majority in the surveys said Gwen. So Natalie did not get the point, but Tenley got that point, and that was her 4th point. I didn't write who got points each round, But this was Tenley's fourth point, so I think she got all of them correct. And so she wins on the girl side, so now it's just the boys competing. The next question is, who is your crush in the house? And the majority said Dave. And then next question is, who would be a bridesmaid but never a bride? Which is kind of a brutal question, and the majority said Natalie, and that really does hurt her feelings. For biggest jerk in the group, the majority said Wes, and he's kind of surprised. He's like, I'm not a jerk, but again, he is playing a different game. He does not know his audience. He's playing too strategic-minded, and they are trying so hard to, like, make personal connections. So, alas. That question tied Kovacs and Jesse B., so they go into a tiebreaker. They now both have 4 points after the majority said, after the Wes is the biggest jerk question. So they go into a tiebreaker. And the tiebreaker question is, who has the worst boob job? Which is an absolutely diabolically insane question that they had on this survey. And this would never fly in 2024, I don't think. And it shouldn't, because that's really fucked up. Like, I don't think we should be commenting on people's bodies that way. Like, the worst boob job? That's so mean. That's so mean. Kovacs goes with Chris Ali. He is kind of in his ITMs being like, I don't want to write Elizabeth because I think she has great boobs. But, like, I have to think about what the majority would say. So he is considering Elizabeth, but he ends up writing Chris Ali. Jesse B goes with Elizabeth, which, you know what? I don't blame Kovacs for not writing Elizabeth because I would not want to. I mean, I would honestly hate answering this question at all. But it's very understandable to not put the person that you're in a relationship with. So Elizabeth was the correct answer. So Jesse B wins the rose. So, like, I guess it was a mistake on Kovac's part, but, like, you know, sometimes being a nice person is more important. And I wouldn't want to hurt somebody I care about that much. Even I'm like, they have a weird dynamic, but I can respect the fact that he didn't want to, like, hurt her in that way, because that's just mean. Anyways, the producers are evil for making that one of the questions. The never a bridesmaid, always a bridesmaid, never a bride question also, like, was kind of mean. I don't know. They're fucked up, the producers of this show. Jesse B wins the rose because Elizabeth was the correct answer. And these dates are one-on-ones, not the typical group date style that the winners of these competitions have had, where they pick three people. They pick one person and it's a one-on-one date. Elizabeth is upset because she knows she and Kovacs are in danger and she wished he had gotten the point, but I think she also would have been hurt if he guessed correctly. So anyways, Natalie is really hurt about the never a bridesmaid, always a bridesmaid, never a bride thing, because she really wants to get married and have kids and have a family, and that's something she really does want for her. Self, and it sucks that people don't see her that way. Kovacs comforts Elizabeth. He realizes in this moment, as she's crying and he's comforting her, how much he cares about her. He says in his ITMs, seeing her this upset makes him realize how much she means to him. I really don't like this man. Like, I'm sorry, that's kind of annoying, but that's sweet, I guess. If I had to cry for somebody to realize that they cared about me, I'd be like, fuck you, okay? Actually, you know what? It wouldn't take that long. I cry very easily. Alas, moving on. Tenley takes Kipton on her one-on-one date. Wes is still determined to get the couples out. That's very much his edit, is like every conversation we see of him, he's somehow talking about how the couples are a threat, we need to get the couples out, yada, yada, yada. Shut up, dude. You're digging yourself a hole. You can't beat them. Join them. Anyways. Tenley's one-on-one, first they ride a helicopter, then they go ziplining. It's all very romantic. It's all very cute. They're bonding. They seem cute together. Nothing substantial to say about their date. I have to say, it's also hard for me covering the romantic aspects of this show, given the fact it was a decade ago, because I'm like, I don't even know. Like, when I talk about a Bachelor show in real time, it's like, maybe they're still together, maybe they'll last, maybe they won't, but there's more, like, it's real time, so it's like I'm watching their love story unfold, and most of the time the couples aren't broken up by the time the after the final rose happens. So, like, it feels less weird to talk about, like, the romance. Here I'm like, they are not together. Why am I talking about Tenley and Kipton's They are not in a relationship. This happened 10 years ago. They're probably married and with kids with other people. Why am I talking about that? I could never cover an old season of The Bachelor in this capacity. The only reason I can do it with this is because it's not like the person who wins at the end. It's like the thing they win is an engagement ring and like a potential relationship. The thing they win is money. So it feels like there's a game aspect that feels like good to cover because it feels like no matter, you know what, like no matter if the couple, if there's like a couple that wins at the end, like let's say Kovacs and Elizabeth win, which God, I hope they don't, but like, sorry, that was mean. But like, if they win, the fact that they won like the show, that doesn't, even if they don't end up together, that doesn't change the fact they won the show because they still got the money and they won the prize and they, you know what I mean? So like that, it's fine to talk about, but like if the romance, I'm like, if they're not together, why do I give a fuck? Respectfully, I wish them happiness in whatever relationship they ended up in, but unlikely with each other. So moving on. Back at the mansion, Wes is still scheming. I'm kidding, but they open up, like they go back to the mansion and he's asking about, like he's like theorizing about Tenley and Kipton's date and like if they're gonna be a solid couple and about how he wants to break them up because they're a solid couple. And he says in ITMs, if he doesn't break up the couples, he's going home eventually. And like, dude, you're in danger right now. Why are you talking about eventually? Is that smart in the long run? Like, yes, obviously it's smart in the long run to be like, we need to make sure the couples don't like get to the end because they have more loyalty to each other than like than us people who are non-couples have, obviously. But like, why are you, like, you're in danger right now. You just got voted. I think he just really does not have a good read on the house. And I wonder if, it's so interesting to me because I'm like, I wonder how much we didn't see. And like, is he genuinely like not grasping what people are telling him? Or is he just talking to a lot of people who like also are completely on his side and aren't like, dude, people don't want you here. Or like, you know, like you're like, I don't know, maybe he's such an interesting character to me because I'm like, yes, you will go home eventually if you don't break up the couples, but you could likely go home now because you're trying to break up the couples. You know what I mean? He's just so fascinating to me. Back on Kipton and Tenley's date, they bond, they kiss. It's all great and romantic, super happy for them. Jesse B chooses Peyton for his one-on-one date, which makes sense. They had the fantasy suite in the last episode. Kipton and Tenley's date, the night portion, is sweet, romantic. I really have nothing to say about it. I'm so sorry. Kovacs, back at the mansion, Kovacs tells Elizabeth how much he cares about her, yada, yada, yada. They're very up and down, but right now they're up. So congrats to Kovacs and Elizabeth for now. Tenley gives Kipton the rose, he accepts, and then they get a fantasy suite card and accept it. Kipton says that they, when they get back to the mansion after their fantasy suite, Kipton says that they have to tone things down so they're not huge targets. He's thinking very strategically. I like Kipton. The fact that the majority voted that he was going to win, I fear that may not happen because he may have this target on his back, but I actually do kind of hope he wins because I really like the way Kipton's playing in that I think he's balancing very well of like pursuing something with Tenley and like nurturing that and like being very present and like real and genuine with her, but also like thinking about like the implications of this relationship in the game and thinking strategically. Like, I really like the way Kipton's playing. So if he wins, I'd be very happy with it, but we'll see how things happen. Jesse and Peyton's date is next. They go on a biplane, which seemed really cool. I don't know if this would freak me out or if I really like it, but part of me wants to try it. Like, I think this would be so cool. Do I also think I would be like, I don't know. I'm a very anxious person, but depending on my mood, I am more like willing to try and put myself out there and make myself a little bit uncomfortable. So it would have to be a good mental health day for me to be like, yeah, I can do this. You know, I can push through the anxiety and I can enjoy it. I can enjoy it because I am anxious and there are moments where I'm like, I cannot manage my anxiety. I can't do this adventurous, interesting thing right now. But then there are other times where I'm like, I'm anxious, but like I want to push myself because this is going to be a fun memory and I'm going to enjoy it and I'm going to be happy and every, you know what I mean? So it would have to be a day where I am a little bit more like stable and I can like manage the anxiety and push through it and enjoy it. But I think I would enjoy a biplane. Like, I don't know. There are things that I'm like, I would love to do this. I think it would cause me to have a panic attack, but I would like to try. But the biplane seems really cool. Anyways, back at the mansion, they speculate about what's going on in the date, like specifically if they'll get a fantasy suite, if they do, like how far they'll go, which is kind of like weird, but alas. Chrissy is freaking out about her place in the group. She's like, every week I'm in danger, and every week I've made it, but every week I'm in danger, and I am still in danger. She's living on borrowed time, basically, Chrissy is. Kovacs says, talking about Jesse and Peyton, that they bicker, like he wouldn't be surprised if Jesse's kind of pissing Peyton off, which I thought was interesting. The night portion of Jesse B and Peyton's date is in a plane hangar, and he gives her the rose immediately and she accepts it. And then she starts making martinis, and very quickly he starts to irritate her. He's like burping. He's like, he's just really... She says in ITMs that she is used to being like one of the guys, but like on a romantic date, she doesn't really love this. And so she's kind of like not super into it anymore. She's starting to get the ick, if you will. Chrissy, back at the mansion, tries to appeal to Dave since she's on the outside. She says in ITMs that her loyalty is to him. So like, even though they're not really, like she didn't end up shooting her shot with him, he did win her over as a number, so that was a smart move in taking her on the date last week. So I'll give you that, Dave. Peyton is annoyed with Jesse. She wants to keep things okay because she wants the money and she doesn't want to alienate him or upset him too much because she still wants to win the money at the end. They get the fantasy suite card and she turns it down because she is not really enjoying the date, so she turns it down. Which may make things kind of awkward. I don't really know. They go back to the mansion and like the rest of the people in the house don't really consider them a couple anymore. They're like, yep, he started bothering her. They're not a thing. They're their own individual people now. They're not viewed as a duo in the way the other couples were. The boys, Dave and Kovacs specifically, think that they are not a good match. They talk in ITMs about how they're not surprised about this. Chrissy in ITMs says Peyton... they're not a couple anymore, and Peyton very much doesn't really stick to a side. She floats around and is everybody's friend. And I was gagged because I am a Big Brother fan, and floaters are a thing that's a strategy in Big Brother. And I was like gagged when somebody described somebody as floating around and as like kind of being friends with everybody, like not really sticking to one side. I'm like, oh my God, this is what dreams are made of. Finally, they're defining floaters correctly in Big Brother. They're defining a floater correctly in Bachelor Pad season one. That's incredible. They don't call them floaters, but like she literally describes Peyton as like not picking a side and kind of being friends with everybody. And that's kind of a very basic way that I would describe a floater, is like floaters float to different sides. They're not aligned with the same people the entire time. They float based on who's in power, who can benefit them. They do sometimes try to be friends with everybody, so they're in good standing with multiple sides of the house. Like, that is what a good floater does, and it just brought me so much joy that somebody on this show described somebody as somebody floating around being friends with everybody, not really picking a side. It brought me so much joy. I was like gagged. But alas, let me move on. The only options of the guys who could possibly go home are Dave, Wes, and Kovacs. Dave wants him and Kovacs in the end so they can compete against each other. A final two. Wes says that everybody wants to party, but this is like work to him. Basically, he's clocked in. He's ready to play. But everybody here is just having fun, you know? They're just here to party. God bless him, but Wes, I'm sorry. You were just simply not playing the same game everybody else was. Like, the wrong audience. God love you, but like, you were not in the same. Anyways, Nikki says to Wes that she doesn't think he's going home. She thinks that it could be Kovacs, and it should be Kovacs. She's voting for Kovacs. Kovacs says Elizabeth shouldn't say goodbye preemptively because she's kind of like talking about going home. And then he says, and this is a direct quote, I wrote it down, "You don't do that. You don't go into a game and give the other team the trophy before you play. You know what, Kovacs? I don't really like you, But that was a iconic quote. Like, I love that. You don't go into a game and give the other team the trophy before you play. Like, mic drop. Iconic. Love that. Everyone is really stressed going into this rose ceremony, except Wes, who should be stressed. But alas, Wes is still just ready to break up the couples. There's no care in the world. Not worried at all about his standing with other people. I'm so sorry to Wes. The non-couples want to break up the couples. The couples want to stick together. Very standard. Natalie votes for Wes because he doesn't want the couples around and she's in a couple, which makes sense for her strategically. Also, Natalie's aligned with Elizabeth and Kovac, so obviously makes sense. Elizabeth votes for Wes again because he's targeting the couples. I wrote in my notes, but I don't know what this means. It's Wes and Jesse B versus Dave, Kipton, and Kovacs. Like voting blocks, I think. Oh, like Wes and Jesse B are more aligned, and then Dave, Kipton, and Kovacs are like the little trio, I think, is what I meant in my notes. Literally, I have no idea I'm stupid. I don't know what I meant by that. Chrisley is torn because she doesn't want Kovacs to go home, but she doesn't want Kovacs and Elizabeth to stay in the house together. Dave appeals to her and asks her not to send Kovacs home. And like she said earlier in the episode, her loyalty is with Dave, so she obliges. She's like, okay, I'm not going to vote for Kovacs. I'm sticking with Dave. I'm aligned with Dave now. And so she decides to vote the way that he wants her to vote. Gwen appeals to Kipton. He's torn. For the girls, it's between Gwen and Elizabeth, who will likely be going home. Gwen isn't really aligned with anybody. Gwen tries to appeal to Kipton. He's torn because voting to keep her may hurt him. If he votes against Dave and Kovacs, then he could lose those numbers. They'll turn on him. But he also really doesn't want to vote Gwen, so he's torn. Kipton then goes to Dave and Kovacs and tells them that he wants to vote to send Chrisley home. Or no, wait, sorry. I said it was between Elizabeth and Gwen. It's not. It's between Gwen and Chrisley. My apologies. Mind you, Chrisley is voting with Dave's side because she thinks that they have her back. Originally, the plan was to vote Gwen, but after his conversation with Gwen, Kipton is torn and he goes to Dave and Kovacs and he tells them that he really wants to vote to send Chrisley home. And Dave is like, we can't split the vote. So if you really want to vote for Chrisley, if you really don't want to vote for Gwen, you make the call. We obviously want to vote Gwen. To keep Chrisley, but like we're all gonna vote for together, so you make the decision. So that's kind of where we're left off on a cliffhanger before the rose ceremony. The final two men, it's between Kovacs and Wes, and between the women, it's between Gwen and Chrisley. Gwen gets the last rose, and Chrisley is going home. Kovacs gets the last rose, Wes is going home. Chrisley is upset because she voted one way to help Dave's side, and they betrayed her, which is super valid. She like makes a speech before she gets in the limo to leave, and she says that Kovacs, Elizabeth, Kipton, and Tenley will be the final four if they're not split up because nobody is breaking them up. Dave says in ITMs that he feels bad for Chrisley, and at first I was like, oh, okay, that's nice. And then he immediately follows it up by, because she showed her true colors and embarrassed herself. And I was so angry. I was so angry. Like, I'm sorry, Dave. I do not like you. Like, he says that it changes in the last 30 minutes. Like, she wasn't going home, but, like, it changed in the last 30 minutes, and that's the game. And it's like, yes, that's the game, but also somebody being upset that you, like, betrayed them is also part of the game. Like, what do you mean? You're lucky there's no jury, because, like, that would be a bitter jury, a valid reason to be a bitter juror. In my opinion. Yes, it's valid for you to change your mind the way you did. It's a game. It's also valid for somebody to be upset that they put their loyalty in somebody who then sent them home. Like, what? Anyways, Chrisley is rightfully mad at Dave in the limo. She's talking about how mad she is and how stupid the whole thing was. Wes, in his limo exit, says that he separated himself from the pack. They wanted to party and he wanted to play. And like, he was very straightforward and honest is what he says he was. And then he has a perfect read on the Chrisley situation. He says that he bets that Chrisley voted to send him home because she thought that Dave and his side would have her back and they didn't. And he could have told her that. And that's where we end episode 4. There are 2 episodes left. And then at the end, so next week, I'm going to cover 2 more episodes. And that'll be the end of my Bachelor Pad coverage. I don't know if I'll do season two. I want to do a deep dive, like, recap of The Sex Lives of College Girls season three, but I don't know when all the episodes will be out because I don't, they don't typically release all the episodes once on streaming. So I don't know, because next week's episode will be wrapping up Bachelor Pad. So I don't know if the episode after that will be The Sex Lives of College Girls deep dive, or like season three recap deep dive, or if it'll be something else in the interim before I do The Sex Lives of College Girls. But maybe if people like this coverage and they enjoyed it, maybe I'll do season two eventually in another lull. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'm really, really enjoying this show. I'm really, really enjoying the coverage. And if this is the first episode of mine that you like listen to after the Quinn interview and you're sticking around because of that, thank you so much. It really means a lot. And I can't thank Quinn enough for his kindness. It means so much. Great guy. Buy his Cameo. Follow him on Twitch. Follow him on Instagram. Follow him on TikTok. Follow him on Twitter. Follow him wherever. Send Quinn all the love. He's a great guy. So thanks so much for tuning in. It really does mean a lot. You'll hear from me hopefully this weekend, if not early the following week. But thank you so much. It really does mean a lot. And you'll hear from me soon. Bye.